This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run as we kick off the show at 6 o'clock on Friday, the 21st of September. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Tan Chung Han here with me, yellow.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Friday.
Friday. Was this week a short work week?
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, I can't keep track anymore, though.
So that's it. It's over. Our long weekends are over.
Well, now, hold on. Oh, we've got another one coming up. Well, if you take the day before Deepavali off, then you get a four-day weekend.
Okay.
That's in November, though.
Right.
So be patient, people.
We are so manja, I tell you. Every month we want a public holiday or a long weekend. Well, stay with us all the way till 10 o'clock today. We've got a whole range of interviews and news and analysis. Of course, the biggest story being the charges of the former Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Razak. And we'll keep you abreast of all the latest developments on that front. And you can also talk to us at any point in time during the show. We have a WhatsApp number, which is 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet me at Melissa_Idris. That's Melissa with one S, please. And Han, you're at...
You know what? I'm not sure. I'm trying to look it up frantically right now. I never had to give that information.
I tell you what. You can talk to us collectively at BFM Radio. That is our Twitter handle.
Yeah, I'm such a noob. I have no idea what's going on.
That's true. Well, you'll catch up with the Twitter technology.
Okay, I found it. It's at Han C. Tan.
Han C. Tan.
There you go.
At Han C. Tan. You might want to remember that. So people ask you what your Twitter handle.
It's not very common that, you know, I've got a lady come up to me and ask me for my contact details. So that's why. I got to work on this.
You know, I'm seeing more and more often that people are putting in their Twitter handle on their business cards.
Yeah, I've noticed that. But, you know,
would you do it? Would you put it on your business
card? Not really. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense because my Twitter handle is only there for you folks to contact me. I rarely tweet anything out. So if you are expecting some awesome insights in 240 characters, I'm not the guy.
Save it for radio.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. I do all my talking right here on this show.
All right. Well, come talk to us. Again, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Practice again, Han. What's your Twitter handle?
At Han C. Tan.
That's right. Okay, let's take a quick look at news overnight. Now, it's been revealed that US President Donald Trump had recommended to Spain to build a wall across the Sahara to solve Europe's migrant crisis. But apparently the Spanish foreign minister had come out and revealed this and said, well, I disagree with the strategy. Donald Trump made the comments when he visited Spain. When the foreign minister visited the US at the end of last month.
Yeah, I mean, because look, one small problem here, because the Sahara Desert stretches for 3,000 miles. That's about 60% longer than the US-Mexico border. So good luck with that, Spain.
But building a wall is his solution to everything.
Yeah, I know.
So he's just recommending it to other countries. We have also in France, the court in France had ordered Marine Le Pen, if you remember her, the far-right leader in France. Now, he has ordered Marine Le Pen to undergo psychiatric tests. This is all part of an inquiry into what she did, I think, a few years ago. I think 2015, she shared images of Islamic group atrocities. So there was a body of a decapitated Islamic State victim, and she had posted it up on her social media. And now, as part of an inquiry into that, she's lost her parliamentary immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And now the court wants her to go through and see whether she was of sound mind.
Yeah, well, she has hit back and called the move crazy, although, you know, she could still face a fine or even a jail besides, like you mentioned, Mel, her being stripped of her immunity as a parliamentarian.
Mm. Yeah. And speaking of France, Han, there's this video that's gone viral there. It's really divided opinion of the French public. It's about a Paris bus driver slapping a 12-year-old boy. Apparently, the boy had told the driver to shut up. You know, like how some kids go, shut up.
Right.
The boy had apparently run on the road and the driver had to brake hard. So when they had a bit of a confrontation, the boy told the driver to shut up, and the driver had slapped the boy across the face. And some people are saying this is child abuse. Mm. Other people are saying, well, he reacted out of anger and has since apologized.
Right. So it depends on where you stand in terms of, you know, whether or how much society should be child-centric. Obviously, in a developed and in Western economies, they are on one side of the spectrum, whereas perhaps for the stereotypical Asian family, like, nah, kid, like, you know. So not condoning physical acts against a 12-year-old boy. I can see why it has divided not just France, but basically anyone who's watching around the world.
So that video, I think it looks like the boy had put not just himself, but also people in the bus in danger. So that was, I think, some of the arguments of the people supporting the Parisian bus driver.
Yeah, I mean, because he ran right onto the street.
Exactly, and could have caused a terrible accident. Mm. All right, 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. And after this, we're going to take a look at cashierless stores. They're coming, and are you ready? Next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 11 minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning, Friday the 21st of September. I was cream with White Room. Now, Amazon is considering a plan to open as many as 3,000 new Amazon Go cashierless stores, and this is over the next few years. This is starting, I think, kicking off in the US, but I'm sure it will eventually pick up around the world. So the way it works is that you just go in with your a smartphone app on your phone, and when you go in, you have to scan your phone at a turnstile, and you can then take whatever you want in the store, and then when you exit, automatic sensors will know what you've taken and will charge your account in Amazon. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah, no,
absolutely cashless.
Yeah, and it promises a tremendous amount of convenience, right? But when going back to the idea of this, these stores being cashless? Yeah, cashless.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, does everything have to be done in the name of convenience? I mean, is convenience king, right? Because, well, I might be revealing a bit too much about myself right now, because, you know, sometimes I do enjoy the interaction I have with the cashier.
Especially if she's a pretty girl.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. All right. So, you know, because you have those moments where you're meeting these individuals and you can just say something pleasant and put a smile on their face, and they will do the same to you as well. You know, and this is something that I would like to think is extended to broader society, right? Whereby, you know, not everything has to be done in the name of convenience.
Right.
You know, sometimes you preserve that essence of human communication, face-to-face communication.
That's profound. Okay, I have to say, I half agree with you, because I think there are moments where I enjoy the human interaction, specifically at F&B outlets, right? I love talking to people behind the counter, the baristas, people come to the table. The wait staff are great at F&B outlets, but also because they're trained and they're service-oriented, so they're particularly nice to you, maybe hoping for some tips, who knows? But at a cashier, I don't know whether you notice this, sometimes the long lines sometimes get me, and I'm looking at you, IKEA, for those long lines. I mean, it's not IKEA's fault. It's just the fact that it's very popular on weekends. and, you know, having a cashless system would really speed things up. I think grocery stores in the US, in America, sorry, UK, and in Australia they all have these kind of cashless, but it's a kiosk, right? You go in. I don't know whether that system would work in Malaysia. Would it work in Malaysia?
Well, okay,
because it's like on a system, is it?
Right. Well, okay, for these ones, like, you literally don't even have to check out. You just walk out of the store. Whereas I think the ones you're referring to are the self-checkout
store. Yeah, self-checkout. Yeah. That's right. So not cashless, but self-checkout.
Right, self-checkout. And that's what we have in IKEA here in Malaysia. And for the record, you know, I love IKEA. I wish they paid me to say that. You know, but
this is not sponsored.
Yeah, not sponsored content, right? But then, you know, again, fine, I get the convenience of it. Yeah, sure. Because looking at Amazon's justification for these 3,000 new Amazon Go cashierless stores, the idea is to, you know, eliminate all those, like, mealtime jams, right?
So these are like kiosks, food kiosks,
right?
Convenience stores.
And, like, you know, try to make sure that everything's all speedy and all that. No, I get that. But what are we sacrificing in the process? Mm. No? Like some of these elements of, say, you know, because cashiers, especially in the States, I don't know about Australia, but in the States, those roles tend to be filled by young kids, college kids, you know, who are just going into the workforce.
Or right. Senior people looking after retirement. You're right. I've seen, you know, it's often people who may not be in the... I guess the
most productive years of their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree.
You know, and then so you got the element of community service as well. Mm-hmm. No? So I've kind of enjoyed that. Maybe I'm a hopeless romantic. There's that nostalgic, you know, side of me. And yeah, you know, it'd be kind of a sad thing to see go away.
Okay, but I don't mean any disrespect.
Yeah, bring back time writers.
But you are referring to, you know, your experience in the US and the UK. Mm. What about the experience in Malaysia? So for me. I have to say my biggest pet peeve is when I'm at a checkout lane, and every time I'm the one who says thank you. It's always, I pay my money, I get my groceries, and I say thank you. And I catch myself saying, wait a minute, isn't that person supposed to say thank you to me? I just gave you money. I don't mind it, but it's just, it feels really odd that I'm the one who's approached, who has to initiate this, and often I'm met with like a grumpy face. You know what I mean?
I'm going to contrast your experience with my experience, and this is for my patronas at Puchong Prima there. So I've been going there for years now, right? And the attendant there, Suhaimi, God bless his heart, he's a great guy.
Hope he's listening.
Yeah, well, probably not, because he always comes to, because he knows me from my TV days, you know, and so he still thinks I'm on TV. He doesn't really listen to BFM, but you know, he knows me for so many years. So when he comes, when I walk in, he greets me with this,
Buggy like
boss.
You're a regular.
Yeah,
nice.
You know, so I love that. And guess what? You won't get those kind of personal attention with this cashierless stores.
That's right. Just to mention, Mr. Tan, thank you for texting in this morning. He's asking, didn't Amazon already do that for Whole Foods? Yes, they did. But this is specifically to Amazon Go, where they're looking at a range of, you know, fast food items for lunch. For lunch goers, so grabbing salads and sandwiches and snacks directly and then walking out without even stopping at a cash register. Again, you can get in touch with us. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to take a look at comments made by Dr. Mahathir. He says Malaysians lack shame and trustworthiness. We'll tell you what he's referring to after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 622 right now. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning. And that was Stevie Wonder with Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Now, Ro has WhatsApped in to say that he is for both cashless and cashier, or cashless and cashier, I think you mean. Both have pros and cons. The only difference is you can get away with giving the machine a little thump if it malfunctions, unlike with the cashier. I would not recommend giving the cashier a little thump if it doesn't say thank you to you. I would not recommend that, girl.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are that solely of Melissa Idris and not of BFM 89.9.
That's right. It's not endorsed by any party. Okay, well, let's take a quick look at what Dr. Mahathir has said. Now, he said that Malaysians lack trustworthiness and a sense of shame. And this is a seen through a simple matter of repaying their National Higher Education Fund loans, or PTPTN loans. So yesterday, he was talking to UTM students and staff. There was a special lecture, and the Prime Minister said that youth would do well in life and to help the country's development if they adopted the Japanese sense of trustworthiness and honour and shame.
Now,
he loves Japan.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Look, whether or not this culture has been fostered, you know, after decades of rule by a particular political coalition, right? You know, I mean, because they're just the easy punching bags, right? When it comes to bearing the blame for all our woes.
You mean the lack of trustworthiness and shame?
Well, I mean, because don't we do the same for our parking tickets? Right,
you know, summons, you mean?
Yeah, summons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, summons, parking tickets. Right, where we don't pay, we wait and wait and wait until that discount gets announced, and then we only go and pay. Right. So likewise, PTPTN. You know, you had this big stick that was perhaps hidden away, and no one's bothered to whip out that big stick and like to smack these PTPTN borrowers into shape. Right.
Right. Yeah. So that's a good point, because I think that maybe. Does the lack of, I guess, shame come from the fact that there's no enforcement, right? And there's no shaming of it. So there's no kind of civil society pressure as well. So when you misbehave on a road overseas, there's this, you know, civic consciousness that everyone shames you because, you know, you've misbehaved in public. But not paying your PTPTN loan, it's also a private matter. No, there's no there's not much enforcement to be seen. They're tied up with, their resources are tied up. So perhaps that's stemming from the fact that, you know, if you don't get caught, why not, right?
Right, exactly. So look, with every society comes its own culture. Well, I mean, not that distinct, but generally each society will create its own culture, right? And, you know, so virtues like, say, trustworthiness or shame, as the Prime Minister describes it, you know, that is not just reinforced positively, but negatively as well, right? So you've got to have a bit of both, I would think. So, you know, perhaps that problems that the Prime Minister is lamenting here is a product of the lack of both positive and negative reinforcements.
Well, you know, Kari Jamaluddin, KJ, has come out in response to this. So he's chided the Prime Minister for stating that that Tun M was ashamed over unpaid PTPTN loans. He's, in fact, he's saying, well, wasn't this part of the Pakatan Manifesto? Aren't they supposed to only repay the loans after the monthly income reaches 4,000? So why are you ashamed on behalf of them?
Yeah, and and also I think the Pakatan government had removed a whole bunch of these guys of the
blacklist,
immigration blacklist, right? So yeah, you know, once again, because I can understand the political costs that comes with it, but if you're going to dangle this carrot, you know, on one hand, but then at the other hand, you know, not wield that rotan, right? Then what's the message that you're sending out to these PTPTN defaulters? Are they defaulters? Yeah, I guess they're defaulters.
Yeah, so, okay, what makes... So he's referenced Japan specifically as this, you know, society that is all about honour and, you know, avoiding shame, right? So what makes Japan that, as opposed to Malaysia? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And, okay, I'm no sociologist, but from the little that I know about Japanese society, this is, you know, generations upon generations of socialization, as what sociologists will call them, socialization, like the process by which we learn what is normal and what is valued in that particular society, right? Mm. So, like, say, a deference to elders, you know, being on time, you know, etc., right? And making sure that you do your job well, as opposed to perhaps some less stellar virtues of I'll get away with as much as I can until I get caught, you know,
yes,
like that kind
right.
of thing. So I think that's what's at stake here, you know, the values and culture that has not been fostered properly here in Malaysia.
Well, tell us what you think. Do you agree with Tun M's comments that Malaysians lack trustworthiness and a sense of shame? And do you agree with his, directing this specifically to PTPTN loans? Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 is our WhatsApp number, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the first news bulletin of the day coming up next, brought to you by Sabrina Magdalene. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris. Hello and good morning. I've got Tan Chung Han here with me on the morning run. It's 40 minutes past 6 o'clock on Friday, the 21st of September. Great track there by Bruce Springsteen. I'm on fire. Thank you everyone for texting in or WhatsApping in your messages and joining the conversation this morning. Yasmin, in our discussion earlier, Han, about Tun Dr. Mahathir's comments about Malaysians lacking a sense of shame and trustworthiness. Yasmin says that she agrees with Tun fully, in brackets, for once. And she says that with regards to the PTPTN loan, she's heard many successful young adults saying that they'll only pay it when necessary, perhaps when they're hounded for it. She's even heard some of them saying, no need to pay lah, other people also don't pay, so why should I?
Yeah, you know, so plenty of comments there. I don't know if you have time to read all of them, but I think Ro is messaging in again. KW, thanks for your message as well. And besides Yasmin, this other unnamed WhatsApper saying, how about free university education first?
There you go. Well, again, you can join the conversation at any point in time. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can text us at 018-789-8899. Now, let's take a quick look again back to the leaders of our country. Now, a few months ago, if you recall, Tun Dr. Mahathir had said or had claimed that Dato' Sri Najib Razak told him in a private conversation that cash is king in maintaining political support in Malaysia. So now Najib has come up to admit, well, not only to admit that he said that to Dr. Mahathir, but also clarified what he meant by it. Now, Najib said that he did not mean giving cash handouts to buy support or to bribe someone. What he meant, I think, was the fact that when he said it to Dr. Mahathir, that was back when the relationship was good between the two leaders, and Dr. Mahathir had disagreed with BRIM, so disagreed with the cash handout and would have preferred subsidies in order to lower cost.
Yeah. Now, you've got plenty of research done by economists around the world about this kind of direct transfer of when it comes to social assistance, right? So cash handouts are actually better in that sense. Now, I understand, when it comes to right-wingers, the fear is that when you give the poor and the needy cash, oh, they're going to waste it on booze and drugs.
Research has shown otherwise.
Exactly.
So research from the World Bank and long-standing research have shown that when you give unconditional cash handouts, mm-hmm. it does more to alleviate poverty than it does. So the fear of having, they're going to spend it on cigarettes or booze, and to have it conditional. So some of the studies show that conditional cash handouts don't work as good as just cold hard cash.
Right, exactly. And also, you got to do one better. Give it only to the women of the households. Yeah. So, us men here, hi. Not trustworthy, like the Prime Minister said.
Maybe he should have refined that statement.
It's only these male PTP. No, I'm kidding. Anyways, so coming back to whether or not subsidies or cash handouts would be more beneficial, I still think that, cash handouts would trump subsidies, because then the individual, as an economic agent, can then choose where to spend cash.
So do you think cash handouts are better in terms of more targeted help as opposed to subsidies? Because subsidies is across the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what subsidies actually does, to be fair, subsidies could also be targeted. Yeah. But it's also harder to control. Cash handouts are more, are more targeted to perhaps more needs-based. If you were to say, look at subsidies, it could mean that it's a broad brush stroke of, lowering costs across the board. So wouldn't that be better for most people? It would help more people than just a few.
Well, so it depends, right? So for example, right now we've got this blanket petrol subsidy for RON 95 and diesel. Now it is unfairly benefiting those who are well off, those with the 2.0 cars, as opposed to those riding a motorbike, right? Because if you consume more of that petrol, you're actually a greater beneficiary of those subsidies, right? Now, I understand the role of subsidies generally, in terms of, say, trying to either encourage consumption of a certain good or service or discourage, right? Subsidies would be to encourage. Or the production thereof, right? I get that. But then if you choose not to consume that good or service, then you are foregoing that subsidy, right? So that's why I still think that cash is still much better, because then you have that element of choice. I still like that element of choice.
Well, that was what Najib Razak is claiming he meant when he said cash is king. I don't think he agreed with the interpretation of Dr. Mahathir in saying that cash is king means maintaining political support. He wanted to move away from that and saying that he meant cash handouts.
Damage control,
perhaps.
Question mark. Yeah.
All right, 6:45 right now. We'll be back with a look at whether MPs should vacate their seats when they quit their parties. We'll discuss next. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:51 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han. This is The Morning Run. If you've just joined us, welcome. We're going to take you all the way till 10 o'clock today. And thank you for your messages. We just want to say to WP Cheng, who texted in on our discussion a little earlier about subsidies versus cash handouts. He's saying that if your study, the study that we referenced, Han, is accurate, then EPF study on how people use their money is inaccurate. If you could send us that survey, that would be wonderful, Cheng. Thank you so much. That song you heard earlier was Something for Kate, Survival Expert. Now, let's take a quick look at this op-ed that came came to our attention. This is an op-ed by Kwa Kia Song, who's the advisor to Suaram. And he had posed the question of whether members of parliament who had resigned from their party or their coalition under which they ran for during GE14, whether they have an ethical obligation to vacate their seats. Now, this is because they were elected based on their coalition affiliation. So if you vacate that seat, does that mean that you then have, if you leave that party, does that mean you should vacate that seat?
Right. Now, once again, that good old debate about whether or not voters voted for the individual or the flag, right? Ideally, I would like to think that Malaysian voters voted for the individual. Although, to be fair, I mean, When I went to the polls for GE14, I had five different candidates. I didn't have time to look up, you know, every single individual, right?
Manifesto, yeah, look at their track record.
And there were five of them, you know, two major coalitions. So you go figure who the other three were. Like, you know, so whether or not we have the time to do this deep dive into every single candidate, are they as localized as we think? You know, the reality on the ground may not reflect those ideals, right? So I think the reality is that you just go in there and vote for the flag. So perhaps there's some merit to that discussion, but you know, how do you really ascertain then whether or not each voter voted for the person or the flag?
Yeah, so who would make that call, right? So would it be that you would then vacate the seat? I mean, the ethical argument would be vacate the seat anyway, because you've left the party. So to avoid any kind of confusion or ambiguity, vacate the seat anyway and then run again the next time. But then there's the cost of a by-election, right?
Right.
So if you win even under a different party, means that they're voting for you as the individual, as the leader, and it doesn't matter which party you're affiliated to. But the cost of a by-election, maybe political fatigue when it comes to this type of, I guess, you know, crossovers. Oh, I was going to say lompat kata, but crossovers is better.
Yeah, and recall that we spoke to Jahaba Sadiq, the founder of TMI, not too long ago, and he spoke about the lead up to the Port Dickson by election, mm-hmm. and already political fatigue. You know, here we go again. It's not even been, 4 months since that resounding victory by Pakatan for GE14, and already that phrase, political fatigue, is coming up already. And we heard that phrase many a time, even in the lead up to GE14 as well. So do we really want to risk it, or just let it run all the way into GE15 and then voters can decide again?
Well, you know, in India, Han, there is the Anti-Defection Act. So this was included in their constitution in 1985, and what it meant was that it had provisions for disqualification of elected members on the grounds of defection to another political party. So if you went to another party, you would automatically be disqualified under their constitution. So now there's been calls for the new Pakatan Harapan government to make this anti-defection law, so to legislate it, that if anyone leaves the party, they have to vacate the seat. I'm wondering whether that could be a way to keep people within the party, you know, in a way to safeguard who voters voted in. But whether that means that's a way of deterring someone who wants to leave or, you know, feels that their political affiliations no longer are in line with the party.
Yeah, well, I think some parties, and look, if you know any better, do let us know here. But I think some parties in Malaysia have their own measures already. I think, like, you know, you cannot hop parties.
Yeah, but look what happened during the Perak crisis, right? So when we had the Barisan Nasional representatives defect, the Perak representatives defect to Barisan Nasional in 2009, that caused such a crisis in the political scene. So that's, I think, an example of how that can really affect the political system. I think it's really more of whether we should legislate this or just have it as a guideline under the EC.
But again, given the very fluid nature of the political landscape in Malaysia, right? I mean, is that naturally a bad thing?
You mean that there are lots of people who cross over every time?
Yeah, no, because I'm sure, look
no
at...
No permanent enemies or friends in politics.
Right, exactly, right? No, because here you have a prime minister who, if he did not defect against UMNO, then we wouldn't have the result that we have today, at least, well, according to some political analysts, right? You know, so, and then you look at what happened in Sarawak. Now you got this GPS coalition, you know, no longer a BN coalition over there, right? So if it's in your favor, wouldn't you welcome it? I don't know. Well, something to think about.
Something to ponder this Friday morning. We've got Two Door Cinema Club coming up next with Something Good Can Work. VFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.